Welcome to the Block Podcast on Youth Express, recorded live from SLB Radio. This is Shania. I'm a senior at City Charter High School, and joining me are...
Jocelyn Dominguez.
Kalise. I'm a sophomore at Obama Academy.
Jonathan.
Hennessy.
Aaliyah Rose. I'm a senior at Obama Academy.
All right. Today, we'll be discussing the FBI and the Apple Unlock iPhone case. Beyonce, Black Excellence, Education Justice... we're doing an interview with Genesis, and we are also doing a spoken word with Allie. Starting off our first topic.
The FBI asked Apple to unlock the iPhone of the San Bernardino shooter. Apple refused to unlock the killer's phone. Apple thinks it can put millions of people's privacy in risk. The FBI wants to make a version of iOS that bypasses security. I think it could be a danger to Apple customers.
I think that it's like a huge like invasion of privacy when it comes to doing stuff like this, because it's not only going to like affect them, but now the FBI would have access to any other person's phone that they just asked to be, like if they asked Apple to unlock it, then they would unlock it for them. That's just like a huge invasion of privacy, because who knows if they're looking at this that specific thing. They could be looking through everything. It's just a huge violation of rights.
Yeah, you hear about it all the time where, like, the government pushes your rights aside to get what they want done. And you just wonder, like, if in all cases do your rights hold up, or whenever the government feels like your rights should just be pushed aside, or they just pushed aside.
Right. Is the integrity of the Constitution really stable?
Even when it comes to, like, wartime, and we just learned about this in U.S. history, it was a case where... a man was openly, like, going against the war, and everybody was upset. And it went to the Supreme Court, I forget the case name, and it was, like, a question of whether this man should be able to use his First Amendment right, freedom of speech, or if the government should push it aside when they feel like it can make other people upset. And there was this thing of, like, your freedom of speech doesn't hold up when other people are being put in danger. But was this man putting anybody in danger by saying he doesn't think we should be in war? It just makes you wonder, like, when do my rights actually stand with me?
Yeah, that does make, like, a lot of sense, because you can't just, like, turn the rights off when you feel like you can. Like, the FBI shouldn't, and I guess in with the law, like, it doesn't mean that you have the right to invade their privacy, because if you were in their situation, you wouldn't want your privacy invaded.
And like, then it makes you, like, wonder who exactly would they be stopping to ask? Because you already know there's a lot of different, like, bias when it comes to our rights and, like, how they can be violated, and a lot of people don't see how they're violated. So who exactly is going to be stopped and asked, like, can I see your phone, or, like, you know what I mean? Or can I go through these messages? Or I'm curious as to, like, how that procedure would work and if it would be as unconstitutional as the stop and frisks that are happening now.
In this particular case, in the San Bernardino case, I know a lot of people's arguments is that he was a terrorist and that he did a bad thing, so why can't we just go through all of his information and figure out, like, what happened in his break?
Yeah, I think if they were to get into his phone, I don't think they would only be focused on what happened. I think they would try to use that to lead to this and go through things they shouldn't be worried about if they have, like, no right to do so. I mean, I understand where they're coming from, where they want to, like, solve the case or whatever and know what happened that day. But I don't think it's really their right to know, like, okay, they know it, now what? It's nothing changed. It already happened.
Right.
Like, figuring this stuff out, going through his phone, I don't think it'll lead to anything else, honestly.
And at the end of the day, when people know that you're about to search through your phone, they'll just find other ways to hide things. Like, that's the whole point. There are more and more ways to hide any type of terrorist, like, organizations or threats or anything. There's so many different ways that I feel like going through people's phones is just sort of pointless, because they'll just find another way.
All right, we're going to move on to our next subject, which is Beyonce's halftime show. I wanted to start off by saying I did a little bit of research on this, and NYPD, Michael Palladino, feels that Beyonce should direct her performance towards black on black crime, and says that she should get more into the hood.
She should focus her efforts onto the hood.
Yeah, it's kind of, and people were kind of offended because they had the women dressed up as Black Panthers. And people think that Beyonce is, like, anti-white, when she's really not. She's pro-black, but she's not anti-white. Fox News actually had said that Beyonce shaking her explicit and shouting Negro repeatedly. And they were very outraged that she was doing that. I personally didn't see a problem with it. Like, if she had the chance to voice her opinion, then she should do so. It's her time, then it's her choice. Mm-hmm. Then if they didn't want to watch it, they could have just turned it off, honestly.
Right.
There's other things to do.
It's hilarious how they're focused on that now. Specifically, Beyonce's done a lot of pro-black songs. And there are many artists that do a ton of pro-black songs, but they specifically came for Beyonce because she took over the Super Bowl. I think it's hilarious how they decided to, like, put their input on that and talk about what Beyonce should be doing instead of holding themselves accountable for the things that they aren't doing, which a lot of people could criticize them. I wonder, like, where Beyonce plays a role in a police officer's life. I'm curious. I think it has to do sort of with the video, but hey, I could be wrong.
The song that she had sang, I like went and did some research and I got some lyrics, and it says, I like my baby hair with my baby hair and afros. I like my Negro nose with Jackson 5 nostrils. And people find that offensive, but if you wanted to make a song about like a white person or something, you could.
There's already songs describing blue eyes and long brown hair, long straight brown hair. It's like the same thing all the time. There's already those songs, but nobody complains about them. It's just because Beyonce decided to perform at the Super Bowl.
I think the biggest problem that people have with this song is just the fact that they're uneducated on the topic. Being pro-black doesn't mean you're anti-white, doesn't mean you're anti-cop, and for her to have, and people are just uneducated on the Black Panthers, period. People think that the Black Panthers, they're the equivalent of the Black KKK, which is completely false. I mean, I've heard so many people say that, and it's crazy to me. Like, her having, I think this is the best time she could have done anything like this. You have so many people watching, you have black people watching it, white people watching it. Everybody's watching this show. There's no better time to do this. Mm-hmm. And, like, for people to think, like, oh, her dancers are dressed as the Black Panthers, she's anti-white, that's not what the Black Panthers were about. If you actually look into the Black Panthers, they had their 10-point program, mm-hmm. I think. Yeah, mm-hmm. And their main focus was bettering the black community. Yes, they might have carried guns. That's their constitutional right, the right to bear arms. Mm-hmm. So how do you, and then they looked into the laws. They saw that it's okay for you to carry a gun as long as it's not pointing it at anybody. You look at their pictures, their guns are pointed up. Like, the main problem with this is people are uneducated. Just, like, look into the topic, do your research. You'll see everything with this performance was perfect.
A lot of people equate anti-establishment also with anti-whiteness. And I think people, like, kind of get that mixed up with the Black Panthers, too. They were extremely against establishments and institutionalized oppression, specifically not anti-white people. And they were, considering that white people were holding these systems in place, I think that's where the idea of anti-whiteness comes in. And I think that that's their own guilt reflecting back on them. That's just my opinion.
Mm-hmm. People that were against what Beyonce was doing, I don't think they realized African Americans don't have this chance all the time. Like Black History Month, people make a big deal of it. It is 1 month. Every other month is all yours. It's all yours. Mm-hmm. But this 1 month, African Americans cannot have. People have a problem with it. People have a problem with BET. For what? Mm-hmm. It is made. It's made for. It's Black entertainment television. And what is any other channel made for? Other people get mad about one thing that African Americans have. It's like, it's people's human nature is it, and morals are so messed up, they don't realize that this is really not a problem. If you don't want to watch it, then change the channel. If you want to celebrate Black History Month, then don't celebrate it. It is your personal choice, and people fail to realize that they have their own right and have their own ability to not do these things.
White people have every single day of the year, every single minute on TV dedicated
to their history
lives.
In our classes.
Exactly. I turn on the TV. I go to Disney Channel. All I see is white families. I can't, like, relate to any of this. I go to BET and watch the music videos that I like. It's just, like, an escape. But then people will say, oh, it's segregation. We're focused on integration. Oh, my God. Just please.
People love to pull that integration thing out every time you want to do something pro-black. It's so frustrating because then they want to work with you when you're trying to be pro-black. We have I'm one of the leaders of my BSU at my school, and we're specifically celebrating Black History Month really huge. This day we did an RGB day. That's the Black Pride flag colors, and people felt as if it was a racist day. And now we're having an open mic event, and a lot of people have a problem with it. They seem to think that this is a racist event. This is geared towards Black appreciation, but it should be geared towards white and Black appreciation, because, you know, we have to rise up together. That's a huge comment that's not coming from like one person. It's coming from groups of people, and it's coming from also Black people, which is a lot of internalized things that need to be addressed. So right now we're working on a way to address it at the show, but it's just a shame when things aren't about white people. It's such a problem now. And I feel like people are scared to say that. People are scared to say that out loud and recognize that there's so many things for them that when we even try to find ourselves in any type of way, it's a problem. And I think also it's a problem not only because they're scared for the attention to be off of them, but it's a problem because coming to this country, sorry, this is a bigger topic, but coming to this country has always been about erasing our history and erasing any trace of us at all. And so when we even get close to it, it's, oh, no, we need to work together. We need to dive into white history or white appreciation.
I think, again, the main thing you have to focus on is being pro-Black does not mean you're anti-white and anti-cop. Being pro-Black means you're pro-Black. That's the only thing that comes with it. All right, so with Black Excellence, we have, I know most of you have probably heard of it, #OscarSoWhite. For the second year in a row, there aren't any Black actresses or actors nominated for major awards. And so Jada Pinkett Smith put out a video explaining why she won't go and how she's boycotting and stuff like how Black community needs to go out on their own and do better within themselves instead of relying on the Oscars and other award shows to give them everything they need. And other, like, Spike Lee has joined on to the boycott, and it's just brought up a big thing within everything. So other actors and actresses have responded to it, like Nick Cannon, Taraji P. Henson. I know Snoop Dogg made a video about it addressing his opinion. And Janet Hubert, I don't know, she was the original Aunt Viv on The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. And she basically called Jada Pinkett Smith out, saying that the only reason why she's addressing this topic is because Will Smith was not nominated for Concussion. And I know personally, it was a thought that came into my head, like, okay, Will Smith wasn't nominated for this. She might be feeling some type of way about it. And it just makes me think, like, I feel like she's addressing this topic for the wrong reasons. She's addressing it because her husband wasn't nominated for something he deserved, instead of because of the wrong that's actually happening. And then Nick Cannon made a spoken word video about it, saying that Black people have so much other things to worry about being shot in the street by police and everything, and why are we going to focus on this? But it brings the argument, should Black people pick and choose which fights to fight? And it's like, are we going to just not talk about how our actors and actresses aren't being addressed in these major award shows, or how our boys and girls are being killed every day? And in my opinion, I don't think you can pick and choose, but it's like a big fight you have to go towards.
You can divide your attention between a couple of things because they're all affecting you. I think that to say that us being killed and to say us not being nominated are two separate things is completely ignorant. I think it's all one and the same thing. So really, us addressing institutionalized racism isn't really us focusing on the wrong thing. And I certainly don't know the intentions of Jada Smith, but I'm just going to bet that, like, this isn't just because of her husband, because this isn't just an isolated case. This happens all the time in award shows. Even just if you look at the Grammys, Taylor Swift getting the award instead of Kendrick. A lot of people are actually, millions of people are angry about that, because it's obvious when someone doesn't deserve something. It's extremely obvious. And now, because of social media, it's becoming extremely apparent. And I think that it's okay to indulge in expressing your anger about something such as that, because it's not only us just not getting nominated for things, but it's us sort of setting limits on ourselves for what we can achieve.
Yeah, it's just Black and brown people not getting the credit they deserve. But to the next topic, we have education justice with Jonathan.
This is our education justice segment. I'm Jonathan. And I'm an eighth grader at South Hills. This is Kelis, and she is a sophomore at Obama. We are talking to Hennessy from the Latino Family Center about her experiences as an undocumented student at Alderdice. Hennessy recently gave a speech at a community forum last month. Can you tell us about your experience?
Yeah, so Teen Block asked me to speak on behalf of my experiences as an undocumented PBS student. And it was very difficult to be so vulnerable in front of a crowd, but I've never felt so relieved, and I'm beyond thankful for the opportunity to stand in front of the board and tell them my story. And here's actually an excerpt from that speech. Overall, what I can see about my PPS experience is that it was good, but there were challenges that I wish were handled better. I hope that the new superintendent provides the support and resources that undocumented students, such as myself, need. I want the new leader to ensure that teachers and counselors receive the training they need so that future bilingual students will have a teacher who will recognize the efforts made to read in English, or that a flyer comes home in Spanish regarding the gifted program. I wish that I had had an IQ test provider that believed in the strength of a bilingual speaker. I hope that there are more teachers as amazing as my band director. I hope that more counselors learn about how to handle undocumented students that want to pursue higher education. And I hope that PPS can encourage college counselors in the Pittsburgh area to learn how to guide Pittsburgh Promise students to get their financial aid regardless of a Social Security number.
In high school, were you bullied or treated differently because of your immigration status?
I wasn't necessarily bullied by other students, but I did mention in my speech that when I took my IQ test to take CAS classes, I was discouraged by the test provider because she had heard a faint accent, so she assumed that I wasn't going to do well, and that pretty much felt like bullying.
What was your experience as an undocumented high school student and having undocumented parents?
School was okay. I tried to normalize my life and focus on my work, homework, and boys. But there was a constant fear in the back of my mind. I was always worried that something would happen to my mom, that she would get pulled over for a minor traffic infraction, and that would be the end. She would get deported.
What hurdles did you face, if any, graduating from high school?
The biggest letdown was probably my senior year. Everyone was complaining about the Common App, getting acceptance letters to school, and I was just standing by. I knew that my parents couldn't afford to send me to college, and I couldn't even apply to community college because I didn't have a Social Security number, so I had to pretend that I didn't want to go to college.
As an undocumented student, what support did you receive in applying to college?
Emotional support, I got it from my mom, my friends, and my counselor once I opened up to her. But as far as financial support, that came from merit scholarships, the Pittsburgh Promise, and my best friend's family, and I'm beyond thankful for it all.
How did you feel once you made it to college?
Once I made it to college, I was so relieved to be there. I was so thankful for the opportunity to be there, because before, I saw myself as helping my mom clean houses, and that's nothing to be ashamed of, but I knew that wasn't for me. I had such a passion for art, and I actually ended up going to school for interior design.
For the second part of our education justice segment, we have Caitlin Catalova, who is a Martin Luther King Fellow with Friends of Farm Workers, an organization that works for the rights of low-wage workers. Caitlin, thanks for coming to talk with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, if I'm an undocumented student, can an Immigration and Customs Enforcement Officer, also known as ICE, come into my school and take me to a detention center?
So the short answer to this is yes, and I hate saying that because I think it's really scary. The longer answer is it likely? No. A lot of times, immigration agents aren't necessarily targeting children, and they're not likely to come into schools. And there have been some schools around the country, like in Los Angeles, that actually made a policy with the immigration agents there saying that they weren't allowed to come onto their campus because a lot of kids were afraid. So yes, it is possible, but the likelihood of that happening is very, very slim.
What happens when a person is detained for deportation? What is the time frame, and what rights do they have during the process?
The time frame can vary depending on the person that's getting picked up, and the process can vary as well. So I'll just give you a couple examples of what can happen and see if this makes sense. If people aren't here lawfully, meaning that they're undocumented, they can be picked up and they can be detained by the immigration agents or ICE. And then oftentimes they're given papers that they can sign, and those papers are called deportation orders, which means that that person can be deported or removed from the United States back to their home country. If that person signs the papers right away, which happens sometimes because a lot of people don't speak English and they're getting these papers in English and they're scared, so they just sign things, then they can be deported right away. They can be put on the first plane back to their home country. But if they don't sign the papers, which is what we recommend a lot of the times when we're doing Know Your Rights talks for people, we tell them don't sign anything until you talk to an attorney. And this is one of the reasons. So if they wait, then a lot of times they can fight their deportation orders, which means that they can argue in front of a judge why they shouldn't have to leave right away. And if that happens, the time frame can vary. If they're held by put in jail, basically, they can be detained because they're here illegally. It can take months. If they're out on their own and they're free to move around and they're just waiting to hear back, it can sometimes even take years. So it really depends.
In what ways can students advocate for or be supportive of the needs of undocumented students?
I think something that a lot of students can do is to recognize that the struggles faced by Latino students or people that are here who are undocumented are in a lot of ways similar to the struggles that Black people face as well, which is what you guys kind of talked about, right? Police brutality for Blacks is very similar to immigration agents coming and storming in people's houses. So there's like this general fear of police. So I think making those connections is one good way. Another thing that Hennessy's mentioned was doing college applications. And I think a lot of times undocumented parents aren't as aware necessarily of the process. So if you guys as documented students can talk to your parents about the process and can kind of help your friends out who might be undocumented in explaining kind of the way that you're going through the college process, this is one way that you can help support undocumented students as well, just talking through these different processes.
So you mentioned before Know Your Rights Talk. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, sure. So something that I've been doing in Pittsburgh since I started is Know Your Rights Talks for individuals. And I wanted to give a little bit of background and give some Know Your Rights information for undocumented students and just students generally in the event of an immigration raid. So I actually brought some handouts too. I know they can't be seen on the program since this is on the radio, but I'll hand them out to you guys after. And I want to do part of it in Spanish and part of it in English. So I'm going to explain it in English first, and then I'm going to follow up in Spanish, okay? Mm-hmm. So the three main things, and this is right on the front of this document, it's similar to criminal rights. You have the right to remain silent. So tiene el derecho a permanecer en silencio, okay? Y perdóname, yo estoy explicando sus derechos en el evento de una redada. Okay, voy a hablar en inglés y entonces voy a hablar en español también. So primero, tiene el derecho a permanecer en silencio. A second right that you have is to speak to an attorney, okay? So usted tiene el derecho a hablar con un abogado. Es similar a criminal, casos de criminal. So it's very similar to criminal cases in that way. And the third right that's important is you have the right to make a phone call if you're arrested. So usted tiene el derecho a hacer una llamada si es arrestado, okay? Another thing briefly I want to talk about is what happens if immigrants come to your home. Many people are afraid that the immigration agents will come to their home and they want to know how to respond in that situation and what they should do. So ahora yo voy a hablar de si agentes de inmigración vienen a sus casas. And first of all, the thing that I always tell people is don't open your door, okay? La primera cosa que dice es no abre la puerta por nadie. So for anyone. You can speak through the door. If someone knocks on your door, you can ask them who they are, who they're with. Si una persona viene a su puerta, puede preguntar quién es y con qué agente o agencia es que. And the reason for that is because if you open up the door, sometimes that can be seen by agents as consent to enter. People don't have the right to just enter your home. You have to have a warrant to do that. And we tell people that are undocumented, that are afraid of immigration agents coming in, not to open their door because it can be seen as consent. Entonces, no abre la puerta porque posiblemente los agentes van a pensar que puede entrar con permiso, con su permiso. Y es importante no abrir la puerta porque, porque entonces puede entrar con su permiso y es similar a, es su derecho a cerrar la puerta y no, no permitir personas a entrar en su casa. Los agentes necesitan una orden, firma de un juez a entrar en su, su casa legalmente. So at the end of that, I just said they need a judge-signed warrant in order to enter your house legally. If you're stopped on the street, again, you have the right to remain silent. Do not answer questions about where you are from, because that can be used against you, unfortunately, or they can assume that you're not here legally, which isn't always the case. And always ask to speak to an attorney. So, en la calle, afuera de su casa, otra vez tiene el derecho a permanecer en silencio y a hablar con un abogado y no contesta preguntas de su, su país de origen, porque posiblemente los agentes pueden usarlo afuera de usted. So I think those are like some pretty main points with Know Your Rights. Obviously, that's a very brief segment, but I will provide you guys with more information. So if in the future you want to have more conversations about this, definitely do. And please share this with your friends. I have some in English and some in Spanish as well.
Thank you.
All right. I would like to thank you, Caitlin, for being here and giving up your time to help us with our podcast. I would like to introduce Allie with her spoken word.
This is called An Equation for Fate. The truth is, we are an equation for fate. There is no better way to describe my love for you. Like a mother to her child, I forgive the unforgivable. I submit my heart as target practice for the miserable, but you're not hurt anymore. Inevitable. You are the sole reason why I still believe in destiny. I believe that the planets were designed just to align. When we are together, we just add up. You know, the Mayans predicted our love. I swear it's bigger than us. It's black man denying black woman. It's black man denying himself the pleasures of something as real as black woman. It's black man denying himself the pleasures of something as real as black woman. It's black man missing two-fifths of himself so he may never be able to give me his all. Do the math. But our women have love like blood diamonds. And this is a war zone. Love laced in forgiveness. My love for you is stronger than any hooded heads, burning crosses, or strange fruit. Nothing could stop this from happening, could stop us from happening, not even when our problems are hanging down right in front of our faces like black feet. Swinging, dangling, brushing our cheeks. Shakespeare took notes on us. Star-crossed love means nothing to me because my love makes constellations. And I know we were put together to start uncomfortable conversations and revolutions. And my God knows that there's way more than just one solution than Martin Luther. Huey P. taught me and I don't ask for my love. My kind of love can't be restrained. No. My kind of love can't be chained, tarred, or feathered. My kind of love can't be restrained, denied, or questioned. Black Lives Matter will never end in a question mark again. Word to Alicia Garza, Patrice Cullors, and Opal Tometi. My kind of love can't be questioned again. Word to Barack and Michelle, Jada and Will, hell, Gina and Martin. There is no better way to describe my love for you, like a mother to her child. I forgive the unforgivable. I heal the unhealable, and for you, I will do the impossible. Turn water into wine, defy the laws of time, like it was always meant to be this way. Because black love was always meant to be this way. That's how I know that we are an equation for fate. Thank you.
Thank you, Allie, for that amazing spoken word. Before we sign off, I wanted to just advise you with a few announcements. Check out Pyramid PGH on Instagram and Twitter for upcoming events in Pittsburgh, as well as A-Plus Schools. It is hosting Monique Morris, who is a co-founder of the National Black Women's Justice Institution and is the author of the new book, Push Out, Criminalization of Black Girls in Schools. This event will be held on March 9th at the August Wilson Center. You can go on our Twitter at @teen_block. Or Facebook for more information. You definitely want to join us for this important conversation. Okay, this concludes our episode of The Block on Youth Express, recorded live from SLB Radio. Special thanks to Caitlin and Genesis. Thank you for being here with us. We welcome any feedback and input that you have. Please address any comments to info@youthexpress.org. You are listening to Youth Express, all youth, all the time. For more information on this podcast or others like it on demand, find us at SoundCloud or stay tuned to youthexpress.org. Youth Express, catch the future.